Quorum is present. Welcome to the Environment and Energy Committee meeting. We do have a quorum that is present. We're here today to talk about Senate File 86. And Senate File 86, 786, Senator Schmitz from Southeastern Minnesota Silica Sand Mining Joint Powers Board Authorization. We have a number of people that are going to be testifying, and so I want to make sure that we're staying in the interest of time to the minutes that you have been told you were allocated. And so I am going to make sure that that is well adhered, and those that don't get testimony today, if we happen to go over, which hopefully we don't, please note that for the record, you can always submit a written statement. And as such, members of the committee, why don't you look at your packets? There are some written statements that should be in there from the last meeting we had as well as last week. So if you don't have letters that were in there, we'll make sure you get those, but that's assured. Senator Schmitz, welcome to the committee, and I understand that for you have a couple of author's amendments that we want to get put on in the courtesy to the tradition here. So be it. So welcome.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'd like to offer at this moment the A2 and A3 author's amendments.
Members have in front of you A2 and A3 author's amendment. As a courtesy to Senator Schmitz and the history of how the Senate operates over here, we are not going to pick up debate because this right now, we won't pick up debate on this now, this gives the author a bill to present this in the shape and manner that he wanted. And so then afterwards, we can debate the full bill. But these two author amendments get in. So Senator Schmitz moves these.
I do.
All right. Any?
Thank you.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. That passes. Thank you. Senator Schmitz.
Well, thank you, members. Mr. Chair, this is a conversation that has been a long time coming to this committee and to St. Paul. Last week in this very committee, we heard from concerned citizens, local leaders, a number of folks from southeastern, south central Minnesota about their concerns with silica sand mining and essentially the gold rush we've seen in western Wisconsin. My goal here is to get this right and to take the time for Minnesota to engage its agency expertise, its local leaders, its concerned citizens, its representative of industry, in order to make sure that we can move forward together with certainty and with clarity. I think what's happened in western Wisconsin is unfortunate. We've seen a lot of towns torn apart, a lot of local units of government overwhelmed with silica sand mining. We have an opportunity in Minnesota to learn from those lessons and to proceed forward consciously and together. So today I do offer Senate File 786. I'll be taking you through it momentarily here. But before I say so, or before I do so, I would just like to take a moment to express to you the importance of this region. I am from Red Wing, the Bluff Country. I've grown up in southeastern Minnesota. This is a beautiful part of our state. It's rich in tourism. It drives the local economies. We have very rich agricultural land down there, too. We also have happen to have the best silica sand in the world. It's a great thing. It just might be in the worst part of the state as well. So we just want to take time here to get this right and to address some questions. And I think this bill gets us this conversation started. I'd like to take you through it here. And if you have any questions, we can certainly address those down the road. My overview will be brief here. I would like to leave ample time for testimony and then questions towards the end here.
And Senator Schmitz and members, I would request that when we do take testimony, that questions are taken at the end of each section, as we'll have some folks that are pro-regulation, some sand industry folks, and some one other from the League of Cities. So if that's is that okay for everybody? We're good. Senator Schmitz.
Okay. Senate File 786, as provided, we have a couple of big things here moving, and I'll get into this. First of all, we were asking for a generic environmental impact statement to address a number of unanswered questions that have been identified in the last year through the Environmental Quality Board. Those questions pertain to cumulative water impacts, ambient air quality, and just the effect of transportation increases in truck traffic on our region in southeastern and south central Minnesota. So we're calling for a GEIS in this bill. We're also calling for the formation of a joint powers board. It would be known as the Southern Minnesota Silica Sand Board, and this is a way of bringing together around the same table state agency expertise and local decision makers. This is a conversation that is sorely needed. We've had an opportunity here to get local leaders and decision makers together with experts at the state level, and to drive towards a model ordinance. What I'm proposing is an advisory committee of local leaders at the city and in township level, as well as industry representation and concerned citizens that will inform this process. So the two big things, a GEIS and a call for a regional board that will set a model ordinance for the region. Just as the water table or as the aquifers don't stop at county lines, neither does the impact of sand mining. And I think you have the transfer of it, the mining of it. We have to take into account the fact that local jurisdictions should not get in the way of good sound policy. Another thing I call for is an extension of local moratoria authority to take us through this process, and that would be a decision of local leaders. And also in the A1 amendment here offered, or the A2 amendment offered here, a state moratorium in the period of the next year. And finally, we are offering some taxing language in here that would allow local units to better recoup the costs of the mining and transfer in washing and processing of sand in southeastern Minnesota, and also a state severance tax that would allow the state to be made whole in terms of the costs of the GEIS and of agency expertise engaging in the regional board process. So as we walk our way through here, sections 1 and 2 of the bill allow for the Environmental Quality Board to reject a responsible government unit decision. Pardon. On the need for... Oh, yes.
Mr. Chair, Senator Schmidt, that was deleted in the A2 or the A3 amendment, excuse me.
Sure. Okay.
Well, that'll be later in the bill. There's that temporary part. So the first two sections are deleted.
Okay, thank you, sir. Well, beginning with, we have a section here that lists the counties of southeastern Minnesota that are eligible to participate in the creation of the Joint Powers Southeastern Minnesota Silica Sand Board. See, that is section 3 here. And in moving along here, we did find the list of counties that are eligible to participate, as well as the terms for the purpose of the duties of the new board and for the silica sand removal production tax. And moving along to the next section, provides for the creation of a new Southeast Minnesota Silica Sand Board. The board consists of one member chosen from each county participating in the Joint Powers Board. The board shall establish a scientific advisory committee with staff from appropriate agency. Section 6, plan implementation, directs the Southeast Minnesota Silica Sand Board to develop a plan with minimum standards for protection of resources from silica sand mining. And moving on to the next section, directs the state agencies and other political subdivisions to exercise their powers to further the purposes of the plan developed by the board and administer lands in accordance with the plan. As mentioned previously, we're proposing a silica sand removal production tax at the state level, or I'm sorry, at the local level, and the following section, a state silica sand production tax. We also are calling for a GEIS silica sand mining transportation facility study that directs the Environmental Quality Board to conduct the generic environmental impact statement. And we are adding a couple provisions here as well. Moving along here, we have a temporary environmental review requirement giving the Environmental Quality Board powers to put in place new requirements and new rules in the summer of 2013. And finally, the section I skipped over here, section 1, the leases this bill would not allow for the sale or lease of state land for the mining of silica sand. We also have some cleanup language here, which I would be happy to get into as we further discuss the bill. With that said, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to hear some testimony from folks as allowed for on our agenda.
Absolutely. Members, would you entertain any questions from your members now regarding what you just brought us, or should we wait until?
I think
after?
It would probably be most appropriate to hear testimony and allow members to look at the bill and field questions at a later time.
Thank you. So, Senators, we'll go back to the original plan of looking at it in sections. And so, having said that, Let's start with, and as I call names up, Beth Proctor from Lyme Township, which is Blue Earth County, and also David Williams from Township Officer from Preble Township, and that's in Fillmore County. So welcome, you two. And then on deck, Jody McElrath, who's the Save Our Bluffs from Goodhue County, and then Jeannie Pitig, if I said that right. No? Pitig, thank you. So we'll be next after that. So welcome to the meeting.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman, members of the Senate Environmental and Energy Committee. I am Beth Proctor. I live in Lyme Township, which is outside of Mankato, Minnesota. I want to thank you for the opportunity to present the concerns of more than 250 people that live in Lyme Township. To protect the people of Minnesota, it is absolutely essential to have a statewide moratorium on new silica sand operations. If you take a look at my packet on page 2, you will see a map that includes all of the counties that have silica sand deposits. Without a statewide moratorium, large portions of Minnesota are unprotected. Such a moratorium will give us time, give the state time, this time to prepare a generic environmental impact statement, and time for the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency and the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources to set and strengthen standards that will help protect the people of the state. In the Mankato area, right now there are over 2,000 acres that are under environmental review for silica sand mining. This is happening all the way up and down the Minnesota River, and it's probably just the start. If these mines are approved, most of the harvesting of silica sand will be taking place in your drinking water. I would like to share with you a number of answers that I got from the Minnesota DNR on questions related to silica sand mining and the protection of our drinking water. The first question, what amount of an aquifer's surface area can be mined? DNR's answer, there's no statewide regulations. What type of fill material can be put into an aquifer? DNR's response, there is no statewide regulation. To what depth can an aquifer be mined? DNR's response, there is no statewide regulation. If a grandfather quarry is using a wet mining technique, does any state agency have control? The answer, typically, no. Are there any rules on blasting in drinking water? DNR's response, this is regulated by the local governments. Last but not least, has any agency attempted to determine what happens to a drinking water? What is a drinking water aquifer going to look like after all of this is said and done? The short answer, there has been some interest in getting a better understanding of groundwater quality, but nothing has been done to develop a statewide model. If you lived in these areas, and people who live in these areas would really like to see answers other than there are no statewide regulations. Nothing has been done on the state level, or it falls to the local government unit. Without technical resources, the local government unit, which is usually townships or counties, are not equipped with it. And then we can add in the intimidation factors. We will sue you, or we will ask to be annexed by the city or a different government unit. To summarize, to protect the people in these communities across the state, we must have a statewide moratorium, which gives the state time to prepare a generic environmental impact statement and our regulatory agencies time to set and strengthen standards for this industry. Beyond that, townships and counties need help. Perhaps the PCA and the DNR could establish area teams that could provide assistance in reviewing industry applications. I don't mean at the end of the process. I mean during the process. Perhaps a list of environmental consultants that don't play both sides of the fence could be developed. Believe me, in this, trust is everything. One-dimensional stone quarry in the city of Mankato has been granted grandfather status and is allowed to harvest silica sand using wet mining techniques. Do not allow grandfather status to be given to silica sand mining in our drinking water. require all silica sand harvesting and drinking water aquifers to undergo environmental review. How many do you think are invading the rules by limiting it to under 40 acres? 39 acres? 35 acres? And we also ask, well, I know some companies have said, I've been witness to this, we will ask to be annexed by a different government unit that gives us a better deal. Something must be done to limit the threat of annexation by another government unit. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Proctor. You did that well within. You had six more seconds left. I appreciate the effort to get us done on time. And
get a drink.
I love it. Mr. Williams, welcome back to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is David Williams. I live in Preble Township down in Fillmore County. I've been a township supervisor in Preble Township for about 8-9 years. Last year, I spent most of my time drafting what ultimately became the strictest sand mining ordinance for Fillmore County. And the Fillmore County Commissioners approved that ordinance in November of last year. And while that ordinance is very strict in the context of county and local land use ordinances, there still is an incredible need for state involvement in issues that are not within local jurisdiction. I point to a report that was issued by the Minnesota EQB in January of this year on silica sand mining, and there are several sections within that report that are entitled "What We Don't Know, What Might Be Useful," and within those sections, the EQB identifies several kinds of things, and I'm going to read through briefly a list of those things. Air quality issues created by transportation near mines, processing sites, and loading sites. Cumulative impacts to water quantity and quality of multiple mines that are clustered. Long-term effects in the karst region. Little or no information on the amount of silica in the air resulting from frac sand mining. Impacts on property values and potential effects on tourism. These are a group of topics that were identified by the EQB of things that need to be studied and studied by the state. The vast protected forest lands that we have in southeastern Minnesota could easily now be leased to mining operators for silica sand mining and processing. There is a strong need to basically push the DNR into denying this opportunity of leasing state-owned forest lands in southeastern Minnesota for the mining or processing of silica sand. There are numerous state highways in southeastern Minnesota that are strategic conduits for the hauling of high-volume sand toward rail and barge destinations. Many of these highways run directly through small towns, dozens of small towns. Only the state government can provide some regulation over the use of those highways through these small towns so that they do not become overburdened by pass-through traffic. They did not invite or welcome. Several of the proposed mining areas contain clustered mining sites, as was identified by the EQB, across county borders. All the potential cumulative effects, the phased and connected actions that can cause cumulative adverse impacts need to be handled by the state. And in fact, in just this very moment, Fillmore County and Winona County are basically urging the EQB and the PCA to take over the environmental review of about 6 or 7 mining sites in those counties that are clustered together within a 3 or 4 mile radius.
Coming up on 1 minute.
Yes.
Coming up on 1 minute, please.
Silica sand mining operators consume large quantities of water. The DNR needs to be pushed to develop strict water standards I have a mine near me that's about 3 or 4 miles away. The mining operators sought to appropriate 198 million gallons per year of water. That kind of excessive use of water needs to be stopped. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Williams and Ms. Proctor. Next up, please, Jody McElrath. I pronounced that wrong, and Jeannie, I'm going to say it wrong again.
Petig,
thank you so much. Please, for the record, state your name and where you're from.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank
Chairman
you.
And members. My name is Jody McElrath. I'm from Frontenac, Minnesota. I am on the Florence Township Planning Commission, as well as the chairman of Save the Bluffs, a citizens group on silica sand issues. I want to thank Senator Schmidt for putting on our uniform and representing us citizens. We're very proud of his work on this bill. And I want to stress the importance of the bill. And if you think about it as a three-legged stool, the first leg, the state moratorium, very important. Second leg, the GEIS. The third leg is MPCA standards and permitting. The cushion on the top of that stool is the potential for the county, multi-county board, sand board, and also the severance tax. That's kind of the cushion. But the three main parts of this, the three main legs of that stool, are, as I mentioned, without the moratorium and a GEIS occurring, will not stop the mining companies from getting permitted. And as you may be aware, there are moratoria that will be expiring down the entire river valley in the next few months. And what we need to do is to prevent that permitting from going on while we learn the facts on the through the GEIS and set some standards. Without that moratorium, I think that mining could establish itself as rapidly and with the force of a juggernaut, and without standards to be able to adhere to. You'll often hear this best practices is a term used, and I've heard it often even at the county level. That's a very soft term, and it is not very well documented in terms of mining operations, and it's not enforceable. It's not enforceable at a local level. The priority and the order of things.
I'm sorry, does anybody have a, sounds like there's some turkey someplace. Thank you. Sorry to interrupt you, but
that's
like,
quite all right.
Mic check, 1, 2, 3, that's what they're doing. So go
ahead,
finish.
Those three legs would be very, very important for that stool to stand upright. And as I say, the cushion on the top. There is a considerable amount of support at the local level, as well as at the citizen level, for this bill. And in your packets, I had sent you copies of letters, one to the governor from the Mississippi Valley Parkway Commission, and you'll notice that there are senators and representatives in the letterhead, as well as many citizen members in that commission. There's also a signed resolution from Goodhue County. All of the commissioners from Goodhue County signed that and send it to the EQB requesting state assistance for GEIS. I also included a set of talking points, and there's a picture on the back of a processing site that's been built in Chippewa Falls. It's the EOG plant. You can see the magnitude of the size of the operations that we're talking about. I also wanted to mention that there are 41 grassroots websites that have been developed up and down both sides of the river. That's how many citizens would be behind this bill. They all underlined the importance of today's hearing. I ask each of you to support this bill and to collaborate in a bipartisan manner in protecting the most beautiful part of our state and its citizens. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. McElrath, and thank you for staying within the timeline. So, Jeannie Petig,
yes.
Please say who you are and where you're from for the record, and welcome.
Thank you. Jean Petig from Wabasha County. I want to thank you, Senators, for your service to the state of Minnesota. I was born, raised, and educated in the Twin Cities, received a doctorate in education from the University of Minnesota. Then I left the state for over 30 years to pursue a career as a professor in universities across the United States. After retiring, however, I decided to come back to Minnesota, and I chose to settle near Wabasha, right off of Highway 61, in one of the most beautiful areas in the country. My small A-frame overlooks the open waters of the Mississippi River right below Lake Pepin. Last week, I counted over 120 eagles from my front window. Why am I here? Obviously, I want to do everything I can to protect the beauty of the blufflands and the shorelands in southeastern Minnesota. But there is another reason why I want to testify this afternoon. As a member of the Wabasha County's Planning and Zoning Commission, I believe I have some insights and experiences to share with you regarding local control. I am speaking as an individual, not for the whole commission. I want to make that clear. Although I'm newly appointed to the commission, I attended all the meetings last year as a concerned citizen, and I've also done whatever I could to become informed about large-scale silica sand mining. Last Tuesday, we heard several spokesmen for the industry and some representatives of state agencies say that we do not need state-level permitting requirements. Our current system works. Local land use ordinances can effectively regulate this industry. Guess what? They are wrong. Consider my county. Because of a moratorium, there are no frac sand mining operations. At least we don't think so. Aerial maps show that there could be as many as 60 mines in the county, but only 20 have approved conditional use permits on file. The owners of the other 40 mining sites have been notified 3 times as early as last May that they need to get permitted. The county staff have informed them that it's to their advantage to be permitted now, as things will get much more difficult when the moratorium is lifted. Well, we're still waiting for the responses. When it comes to monitoring mining operations or any other permitted activity, Wabasha County has a complaint-driven policy, as do many other counties and municipalities in the state. This means it takes a complaint filed by a citizen to trigger an investigation. Now, this may work when monitoring feedlots. After all, if a manure basin leaks, someone downwind is bound to notice. But what will happen if a mining operation leaks too much particulate matter? The dust that causes silicosis is invisible. How can a citizen's complaint effectively trigger an investigation? They simply can't. I'm sharing this to provide you with a brief glimpse into the real world of local control, especially in rural communities. I am not sharing this to criticize the staff in Wabasha County. They are loyal and hardworking individuals. Budgets are stretched thin, and they need to make do with what they got. Do I think the staff in Wabasha County can effectively regulate silica sand mining, processing, and transporting? Absolutely not. Like the staff in many other counties and municipalities, they lack the time, expertise, resources, and personnel to adequately monitor the industry. The challenges that large-scale sand mining are presenting to our small communities are far beyond their limited resources. I urge you to support Senator Matt Schmidt's bill, as state oversight of this industry is sorely needed. Folks who argue otherwise have not done their research. They have not bothered to contact local staff and officials. They simply have not done their homework. As a former high school teacher and retired professor, I say shame, shame.
Thank you. Next, we have Maria Koveski from Winona. Marie, no?
She's coming.
She's coming? As Marie comes up here, I know... Bobby King, I'm sorry. I did not mention. I forgot Bobby King. Is Bobby King here as well? Hi, Bobby. Welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. First, I want to thank Senator Schmidt for his work on this issue. It's a tough issue. It's a big issue, and he's taken it on. He spent a lot of time meeting with with us and others to put together a framework to address this problem. I want to, at Land Stewardship Project, our position, kind of the framework we think the state needs to do to address this problem is we got to keep local control strong. Local government should keep the zoning powers they have and that they're using. We do need some state-level MPCA permits and state-level regulation that we've heard about. We need the moratorium while that's happening, and we need this in-depth environmental study to put some more facts in front of local governments and the state, and taxes and fees on the industry that pay for the regulation and pay for damages to the roads. And I just wanted to speak to how the bill covers these parts of the framework that we're looking for. The bill does contain a generic environmental impact statement, and we're very supportive of that. And I want to say there's been two other GEISs done, and they've had a lot of criticism leveled at them, rightly so. There was one on animal agriculture. Land Stewardship Project was a part of that. And it resulted in a lot of studies that received little implementation. And I want to say why this GEIS is different in some important ways. Number one, there's a timeline on it that gets it done aggressively. Number two, we're doing it before the industry is rolled into Minnesota. With the large-scale feedlots, we waited until communities were all suffering to do this study. And maybe most importantly, this GEIS has some teeth built into it that the recommendations of the GEIS need to be adopted by state agencies. So it's very different than past GEISs, and it's constructed in a way to address the shortcomings of past GEISs. And, of course, the moratorium has been offered, and we're very supportive of that and think that needs to be part of the final package that leaves this committee and gets passed by the legislature. The GEIS language could lead to state permits. And with large-scale feedlots, they made some of the same arguments that the silica sand industry is making. Hey, we've had livestock in Minnesota forever. We're just the same thing. But they weren't the same thing. It wasn't the same to have 2,500 sows and storing their waste in a 10-million-gallon liquid manure lagoon that was open air. So communities suffered for years before we were able to get enough people back to the legislature to create a strong MPCA permit. We banned open-air hog lagoons, and we created a hydrogen sulfide standard. So I know there will be permits created for this industry eventually. It's just a matter, do we do it now before the harm is done, or are we going to do it later after the harm is done? So I think this bill has some language towards getting us there. We'd actually be supportive of more explicit language. And there's two concerns we're concerned that the PCA might have current authority for. Number one is ambient air quality standard. Silica, long-term exposure to silica is harmful. And we have no ambient air quality standards for people living next to these type of mining operations. The second is most pollution permits deal with discharge. And these mines are looking at changing the hydrology and geology of southeast Minnesota in such a way that even if they're not discharging, they're going to affect how quickly pollution gets into the groundwater. And we think that needs to be looked at. It can be looked at as part of the GEIS, but we think maybe the PCA needs some authority now to get on track with that.
You're coming up on a minute, Bobby. So
yeah, I think that's it. I think I finished in under my allotted time. And again, I want to thank Senator Schmidt for this bill, and we'd like to see it passed out of the committee and worked on as it goes. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. King. On behalf of everybody here, thank you for doing it under the time allocated. That's appreciated. Ms. Kovesky, welcome. I know last Tuesday you weren't able to testify, and we do have your written statement from last Tuesday, but welcome back to the committee.
Good. Thank you very much. I'm here as a citizen from the city of Winona, and partly my story is what's actually currently happening right now in the city. We do have a moratorium that ends in March. But currently, before the moratorium was passed, we have seven operations that are committed to Frexan Industries. We have two We have two washing and processing sites, and we have four rail and barge transport sites, and we have one actively blasting mine. I also sent you all a link to a map from the city website, and I've actually annotated this map because I showed on this map I show where my house is. It's not on the website map, but I'm actually about a third of a mile through the bluff from the mine that's blasting. They started blasting in July of 2011, twice a day, 4 to 5 days a week. You could just about set your clock on it. My neighbor's window was broken after one of the blasts, and they took a respite now, but they're ready to start blasting again in April. They're down into the aquifer. They were converted. They had been operating for stone panels, and they're now mining for frack sand at a different depth level than what they were mining before. In the city, the two washing operations, one of them was grandfathered in. This mine was also grandfathered in. The mine has never had any environmental reviews. There's no permits on file with the city. One of the washing operations that was grandfathered in is conveniently located on a floodplain, which actually beyond the floodplain in 2007, we had serious flooding, loss of homes, and property damage. That mine has never had any environmental reviews. So what happens when, without a moratorium, more industries will come in, and you end up having some operating under these regulations, some under a little bit more strict, and then when our city moratorium goes off in March, we will have more apply, and then if the state comes in with some information that we can use in the permitting process, we'll have a different level. Causes a lot of confusion and a lot of issues. We have four transport operations. The city of Winona operates as a regional hub for both the processing and the transport. We have trucks coming in from Wisconsin. We have trucks coming in currently from Fillmore and Houston counties. And if any mines open up in Winona County other than the one that's in the city limits, those trucks will probably be traveling to Winona also. Just one of the barge operations in the city has been permitted for 48 barges a month. It takes 60 truckloads to fill one barge. So if you do the frac sand truck math and work it out, how many truck trips, that's 5,760 truck trips a month. Divide by 30, you have 192 truck trips a day. Over a 10-hour workday, you have 19.2 trucks coming in just for that one operation in the city. All these operations are currently running. It's not quite the season yet. The mine is going to start blasting in April again, we're told. And as soon as the mining begins again in Wisconsin and back in Fillmore and Houston, we'll have the trucks coming in. We have diesel particulates. We have all of the issues that people have spoken about. What I'm in favor of is the bill that's been proposed, and I would also support a moratorium during the time of the study, as Jody was saying, like a three-step stool. Without any of those legs, you really don't have a good support. Our county officials and our city officials have gone on record as asking for assistance in the permitting process. We have no hydrologists, we have no air quality specialists on staff, and yet we're dealing with those serious issues. Thank you for your time and your consideration. The health and safety and welfare and quality of life of the citizens of Winona and Winona County and all of southeastern Minnesota depends on your deliberance of these issues. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kovaski, and for coming up from Winona. Spent 4 years of my college life in Winona, so beautiful bluffs. Next up, we might want to add, see if we can get a third chair. It looks like these folks might be coming up in groups. First, let's go with Peter Larson from the Minnesota Industrial Sand Council, Fred Corrigan and Christine Pauly from Aggregate and Ready Mix Association of Minnesota. Maybe we'll start with Peter first and then go with Fred and Kirsten after that, and then we'll go from there. So, Mr. Larson, welcome to the committee. Please tell us who you are and where you're from.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if you wouldn't mind, could I defer to Mr. Corrigan to start off for us?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Mr. Corrigan, tell us who you are and where you're from, and welcome.
Mr. Chair, thank you, and I'll defer hopefully some of my time to the speakers following me. I am Fred Corrigan. I'm Executive Director of the Aggregate and Ready Mix Association of Minnesota, a statewide association representing aggregate and ready mix producers. The Minnesota Industrial Sand Council is a council that has been created within our association to represent aggregate producers who are also involved in mining industrial sand. Our association has worked with the legislature since 1950 to clarify the regulation of the aggregates industry, including industrial sand. Most recently, the industry worked with the Legislative Aggregate Task Force for 2 years to produce a comprehensive report on the industry. Comprehensive report on the industry to the legislature in 2000 and to revise and increase the aggregate tax in 2008. Senate File 768, in our opinion, essentially wipes clean decades of legislative effort that has successfully regulated this industry through local controls and state agency permits and ignores the substantial efforts that have been made to protect aggregate resources, the environment, and provide a stable business environment. We believe the public-private partnership that has existed in the regulation of this industry and in the preservation of the aggregate has been effective. Our members want to make clear that they do not support the need for a generic environmental impact statement because they know from experience that each mining site is unique and there would be little value in the results of that effort in the permitting of an individual site. Our members also caution legislators of the unintended consequences of a statewide moratorium and the chilling effect it most surely will have on the development of aggregate resources statewide. Our members would strongly suggest that the governor's request for additional funding for the EQB be directed to increased financial resources for the state agencies to further develop the expertise necessary to ensure compliance with existing state and local regulations and provide that expertise as necessary to local government in an advisory capacity. In the interest of time, I wanted to specifically comment that one of the great conflicts within Senate File 786 occurs when an existing quarry or aggregate operation has both aggregate and silica sand reserves, which is the case with a number of the proposed industrial sand operations in Minnesota. Owners of the property have been successfully operating these facilities within the current local regulations, and these reserves of aggregates and now industrial sand have been preserved for current and future use. How will these dual-use facilities be regulated? Who will regulate them? Will they pay double taxes? Can the regional body make the regulatory and tax climate so onerous as to make the facility uneconomical to continue to operate as a quarry because of the presence of industrial sand and regulations and taxes imposed by a regional body and additional taxes imposed by the state? Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to comment on this bill. We hope you will take the additional time to resolve these conflicts before moving this bill forward.
Mr. Corrigan, thank you. Mr. Larson.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you. I'm from Larkin Hoffman Law Firm, and I represent the Minnesota Industrial Sand Council. You have in your packet, we didn't bring it again this week, but you have some stuff that we gave you last week. And one of the things you have is in a Minnesota Industrial Sand Council document. I think you might have actually gotten this one again today. And I just wanted to read to you the mission statement of the Minnesota Industrial Sand Council. The council was formed to promote safe, environmentally responsible sand mining and processing by developing and adopting the highest standards and practices for mining, processing, and reclamation. We will promote fact-based decisions at all levels of government as well as in communities where we operate or intend to operate. The council will engage the industry in fostering safe, environmentally responsible mining operations and promote safe and work environments, safe communities, and livable wage careers. And you have a list of our members here. You've heard from some of them: Jordan Sands in Mankato, Merriam Junction in Shakopee, Brian Rock Products in Shakopee, the Coughlin Companies in Mankato, Casota Stone in Mankato, Tiller Corporation and Barton Industrial Sands. And I really hope that there's three messages that you remember from us today. We've heard people speaking for us, and we'd like to speak for ourselves on these issues. One is we support strong state standards. I can't say that enough today. We support strong state standards. We do. We support them. We want them. And we want to work with folks to make sure they exist. We support stringent environmental review. We do. We do it. Our projects are subject to it. We support it. Three, we support updated and complete local ordinances and local government permits. We support strong state standards. We support strong local governments. People, we've had some quotes in the paper about what the industry says, and I just want to make that clear at least one more time. We support strong state standards. Now, we believe a lot of those state standards exist. You heard the state agencies here last week. We can't start construction without an air permit from the MPCA. We're not unusual for the MPCA. We've got a silica sand issue for an ambient air standard right now. The Department of Health has told the counties that by mid-2013, that standard will be established. So I will exceed that we have a standard problem on silica sand. The Minnesota Department of Health has said they will complete that by mid-2013. We are voluntarily setting up monitoring systems around our projects to help the PCA understand what's going off our sites. And I want to make clear there's a couple things that you need to worry about with standards. Number one, what's the standard? Number two, are you meeting it? We can talk a lot about dust control, but we're expecting, and some of the results are showing, that a standard that will be set, we're meeting. So I just want to be clear, there is a state standard. We are working with the PCA. We're the ones that are monitoring this, and the Department of Health says they're going to have a state standard by mid-2013. The DNR has been up here. There's been some talk about whether there's a state standard to protect groundwater. The budget people here will hear about the Minnesota Geologic Survey and what the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources does with that information. The area in these counties is the most studied area in the state of Minnesota. And if they need more money to do more studies, I would suggest that you give it to them. But it's very clear that there is information on this part of the state, and the DNR is very used to dealing with water appropriations. There are ethanol facilities, there are golf courses, there are ag facilities, there are holes in the ground that are being dewatered today. There's nothing different between our holes in the ground and the holes in the ground that are in other places of the state regarding water protection. There are standards. The trouble is that they're amorphous because groundwater is a little bit hard to predict. It's local. It depends on the geology of the area. There isn't a state model because geology isn't a state issue. Geology is local. Water tables are local. And the DNR has been doing this work for a long time. If they don't have enough staff, I hope you'll give them the staff to do that work. But I want to be clear, there is regulation on those issues. We support strong environmental review. I've given you a handout last week. We have mandatory categories for silica sand quarries and other quarries that are 40 acres or more. We have a mandatory EIS category for 160 acres or more. As you've seen in the paper recently, you don't have to hit these standards to do an EAW or an EIS. If a local government wants to order one, they can, and it's almost impossible, I can tell you as a regulatory lawyer, to go to court and get that overturned. If they want an EAW, if they want an EIS, you almost just have to do it. It's generally a waste of money to try to avoid that. So again, there are state standards on who has to do environmental review. You heard from MnDOT last week about transportation issues. Just to talk a little bit about the bill, we just have a lot of questions about the council or the board, the Southeast Minnesota Industrial Sand Board. We have a concern about minimum standards only because we don't understand the concept. There's a lot of standards out there right now that are being developed by counties. They have their own setbacks. If you go compare the counties that have their standards in place now, they're different. I don't know whose is minimum, but I know they established them for themselves. And we have a little concern going from Scott and Washington County down to Houston County, deciding what a minimum standard should be. We support environmental review. I can't say that enough. But I want to talk a little bit about the GEIS. I actually, in a past life, was at the PCA. Commissioner of Ag Hugeson and I were the ones that ordered the GEIS. We worked with the legislature. We put the legislation in place. We got the money, and I was on the EQB when it was passed. I'll say the reason that nothing happened after the GEIS, I was gone by then, that someone might put their finger on is because in the 4 years it took to do that GEIS, the agency figured out how to regulate feedlots. When I started at the agency, we had 3 feedlot staff. We ended up with 35 by the time I left. By the time that GEIS was done, we just figured out how to do it. And I don't mean to criticize it because I was one that helped start it. But that's why you can't put your finger on a new regulatory system because the agency caught up. So I appreciate the time. I just want to say, without looking at the bill, and I appreciate Senator Schmidt's work, we don't need a GEIS to do a silica sand standard. The MDH has announced publicly that they'll have one by mid this year. If you look at the issues that are in the scope of the GEIS, you'll see issues. If you look at an EAW worksheet, you'll see those issues are in an EAW worksheet. They have to be addressed. They'll be in the scope of a project-specific EIS. And if you look at those issues, we're not arguing that they shouldn't be studied, but unlike most of the GEISs before, there weren't EISs on projects. There have been two EISs done on 1,000-acre silica sand projects in the last 3 years. There's another one that's going to start pretty soon, was announced in the paper, and there's another one that will be starting probably in March, which is one of our clients. The best way to study these things is to look at a project and figure out the specific impacts of that project. There's nothing generic about these. We don't mean to say that it shouldn't be studied. We just believe that project-specific studies are the way to do this. And finally, Mr. Chair, I would just say we don't mean to be an opponent of anything here. You mentioned last week that you didn't want to divide us into proponents and opponents. We'd suggest that you spend money. We suggest that you make agencies whole and get them to hire staff. And we think a better use of a couple $1 million in a couple years is to give the DNR and the PCA the staff they need to go work with local governments to get all of this right. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Larson. Go ahead.
Good afternoon, Senator and members of the committee. My name is Kirsten Pauley. I'm a registered geologist and a registered civil engineer with Sunday Engineering. I've worked for almost 30 years in the environmental engineering field and worked a lot on non-metallic mineral mining facilities, including industrial sand mining facilities. And I'm here today on behalf of the Minnesota Industrial Sand Council. There's been a great deal of misrepresentation that the industrial sand mining industry is against state standards, regulations, and permitting, and thinks that just local control is sufficient to regulate these mining and processing operations. And I want to start by being very clear that the members of the Minnesota Industrial Sand Council do support regulation. They support local regulation. They support state regulation, and they support federal regulations. The message that I want to convey to you today is that currently the industry is subject to multiple layers of regulations, local, state, and federal, that are at this moment in place and effectively able to control industrial sand mining operations in Minnesota. On the local level, local ordinances give local government the opportunity to control land use and important operating conditions and standards, such as the minimum size of a mining operation, setbacks, phasing, reclamation standards, hours of operation. And the local government can and does place conditions on groundwater monitoring, air monitoring, noise monitoring, blast monitoring, and surface water monitoring. Two counties that I have extensive experience working with, Le Sueur County and Scott County, have excellent examples of mining ordinances that that set forth standards for mining operations. Certainly, there's a valid concern that some local governments may not have the expertise to sufficiently evaluate some technical issues, such as safe levels of crystalline silica or groundwater quality. But existing state regulations serve the purpose of regulating these larger technical issues. State agencies have developed regulations, enforceable standards, and permit programs with the goals of protecting Minnesota's air, water, and quality of life. Throughout the permitting process of an industrial sand, mining and processing facility, these state agencies spend an incredible amount of time reviewing, studying, commenting, evaluating, and participating in the permitting process of industrial sand mining operations. The main state agencies that have the regulations and permitting programs are the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency and the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, and you've heard from both of these agencies last week. The Air Emissions Permit Program enforces the state ambient air quality standards, and mining operators and facility operators are required to obtain that state permit before they can begin operations. The Minnesota Pollution Control Agency also issues stormwater permits, and these require stormwater pollution prevention plans. They require best management practices that are site-specific to ensure that water quality is protected. These permits require that any stormwater that leaves a mining site or any quarry dewatering discharge that leaves a mine site is analyzed and tested for specific criteria to show compliance with the permit conditions. And those permit conditions have been developed to protect our water quality. Minnesota Pollution Control Agency also has groundwater standards and has developed fuel storage and handling regulations to protect groundwater quality, as well as noise regulations. The Minnesota Department of Natural Resources also has several permitting programs that industrial sand mining facilities must follow and obtain permits from. The water appropriations permit is one of these. There's been talk that there's no state standards for those, but each of these sites is looked at in a site-specific way by the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. Typically, a mining and processing facility submits a water appropriations permit to the state, which includes extensive groundwater modeling that's specific to the individual site and to the appropriations that are being requested. Typically, also in the application, a well survey and inventory of all potential wells in the area is conducted. A well interference protocol system is established so that if there is an issue with water supply, the well owner has a guarantee of a new well or a reestablishment of water supply. These water appropriations permits applications also contain groundwater monitoring networks that monitor not only the level of groundwater around the site in response to the water appropriation, but also monitor water quality. The Minnesota Department of Natural Resources also regulates the endangered, threatened, special concern species. They also have a permit program for any work in public waters or public water wetlands, and they also regulate shoreland and floodplain management. In addition, the Minnesota Department of Health regulates wells and borings, and they establish health risk limits and health risk values in Minnesota's air and water. And as you heard, they're currently working on a standard for silica. In the meantime, the industries that have been issued air emissions permits have implemented ambient air monitoring, which includes both monitoring for particulate matter as well as silica. And the Minnesota Department of Health has recommended that the state utilizes the California standard for silica in the meantime until they have established their own standard. And the other important issue to note is that if a new state standard is adopted, these air emission permits can be opened and these facilities all must comply with the new regulations. In conclusion, there's been a lot of talk about the sand mining industry is getting out ahead of the rules and regulations and that it's moving too quickly. I think in my experience that this really isn't the case at all. In Le Sueur County, the county just recently issued a conditional use permit for a mining expansion. That permit was voted on this morning at the county board, and that process started in 2009. That is not moving too quickly at all, in my opinion, and it allowed ample time for a very thorough environmental review process, involvement from many of the state agencies. The Minnesota Department of Natural Resources was very involved. The Minnesota Pollution Control Agency was very involved. And they're still not through the entire permitting process because they still have to obtain some of these other state permitting permits from the DNR, for example. Another example is in Scott County, where a smaller sand mining and industrial processing facility was approved. That's a smaller facility. It went through environmental review in the form of an environmental assessment worksheet as opposed to the environmental impact statement. Even with that smaller or shorter level of environmental review, that process took over 2 years to get through environmental review and the permitting process. So these sites are currently being thoroughly studied. They're not being pushed through in any type of a rapid manner, and there is involvement by state agencies assisting the local governments in preparing permits and conditions that thoroughly regulate these operations. So thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Pauley.
Mr. Chair? Mr. Chair, we'll have a chance to ask the witness questions later. Is that correct?
Yes, we would like to. Yeah, they have 10 more minutes for presentation yet, and then unless it's real.
No, that's fine.
Stop the clock.
That's fine. You bet. Thank you.
Mike Karen, Christina Morrison, Bob Coughlin are next to you. There are about 10 minutes left. So please come forward and begin as soon as you can.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Scott Sustacek. I'm the Chief Executive Officer of Jordan Sands, and we are attempting to become an emerging sand business in Minnesota and in Mankato. We have a 125-year history of mining in this state, starting out with Dementia Limestone in Mankato. I'm here with Bob Coughlin, our owner.
This is our stone here.
And Bob's grandfather, he just pointed out, is the one who put the stone in this room.
This lovely yellow stone surrounding us is from Mankato.
And so we are, the limestone business has been hit very hard by the recession. And as Senator Schmidt and I agree on, there is some great sand here in Minnesota. It happens to lie underneath a limestone, under our limestone deposits in our quarries. And so we have been actively working for well over a year and making significant investment in trying to build a sand operation in Minnesota. We are a small operator. As you just heard, there was a 1,000-acre mine permitted in Le Sueur County. Our mining operation would be approximately 70 acres. We are, as the other sand mines, looking to take advantage of the energy revolution going on in this country. And sand happens to be a way that Minnesota can participate directly in that revolution. But we also understand, as we have been working with our local city, state, township, county officials in the 125 years we've been mining, that we need to do this responsibly. And so we're working our way through our environmental review process. What we get concerned about with the legislation that's been introduced is that after significant investment, significant time, the opportunity to create jobs in Mankato and create a growth business in Mankato, that this legislation would bring that to a screeching halt. And the things that we've worked on and built and worked on with our local township board would be stopped. We are concerned about the tax piece of this bill because we feel that it could put us at a competitive disadvantage to our neighbors to the east who don't have that same tax and who are selling to the same customer base. As has been said here, we've worked closely with state, local, county, township, city officials through this process. We believe in strong state control, and we would highly encourage any investment being made by this state be made into strengthening state control and working with those townships or those RGUs that need and want the assistance in this process. Because I think we feel that with that, we'll develop a better system. I think I ask you to just strongly consider this bill as you look at it. My concern in passing it is that it will lock Minnesota out of the energy revolution that's going on in this country, and you will see the investment and jobs that we could create here flow to Wisconsin. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Sustacek.
Thank you.
Whoever's next, please come forward. There are about 6 minutes, a little over 6 minutes left. Mike Karen or Christina Morrison or Tony Quillis or Jason George? Welcome, Mr. Quillis.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Tony Quillis. I'm the Director of Environmental Policy at the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. And I just want to remind you from, I think it was last week, Tuesday, when I was before the committee, that this is an industry that's not just rolling into the state, that it's been here for over 100 years. And as you heard from previous testifiers, it is one of the most heavily regulated industries in the state, whether it be at the township, the city, the county, or even, depending on the size of the facility, the federal level. It's an industry that Jason will elaborate on that employs hundreds of people and good union-paying jobs. And as you've heard also in previous testimony, that each of these facilities is unique. You can't cookie cut or boilerplate these regulations because each of them, their location is different, their operation is different, there's a different business plan, so you can't just go through and boilerplate or cookie cut regulations for them. Mr. Chairman, and then again, just to remind you before I get into the bill and some of my concerns, that this the industry we're talking about is not just used for hydraulic fracking. It's used for glass. It's used in golf courses. It's used for ceramics. It's used in our windshields. So I just wanted to remind you of that as we go through. But, Mr. Chairman, I wanted to point out that in the last 2 years, in a bipartisan fashion, the legislature and the administration have moved forward to try and find some streamlining, some efficiencies, and to modernize the environmental permitting and environmental review process in this state. And I think we've been able to find that delicate balance that I've mentioned before about trying to promote economic development but still protecting our environment and natural resources. And I think, unfortunately, this is going to take us a step back. And originally, as the bill was introduced, and I want to thank Senator Schmidt, we had some big concerns about Section 1 and Section 2 in the bill because it didn't just deal with the industrial sand industry. It dealt with all industries in this state. So that amendment that went in that took out Sections 1 and 2, we thank Senator Schmidt for that. But one of the things that our members addressed to us is it's the time, the cost, and the uncertainty in the environmental permitting and review process. And we just think this is an example of, again, the uncertainty where they're going to go through, do the time, do the cost, and then it looks like right now that the legislature is willing to put one more hurdle or one more obstacle in front of an individual industry. So, Mr. Chairman, businesses don't operate kind of like me. I'm just trying to get to 2 o'clock, and then I try and get to 4 o'clock like all of us at this time of the year, and it's only going to get busier. But businesses don't think in the here and now. Businesses think in 2014, 2016, 2018. And we just think this sends a very dangerous message to let alone the industrial sand industry that employ a lot of people in this state, but also to other industries as well as to the investment community and future investments to be made in this state, that this can happen to any industry in the state. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to turn it over to Jason George.
Thank you very much. Mr. George, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Jason George. I'm the legislative and political director for the Operating Engineers Local 49. First, let me say I also want to thank Senator Schmidt. I'm not going to agree with a lot of things in his bill, but I think it takes courage to put your name out there and your ideas out there, and I think he deserves credit for that. So thank you, Senator Schmidt. We do have a lot of concerns about the bill. I'll get into that now. The bill calls for a GEIS, establishment of numerous boards and other bureaucracy. Another troubling part was the EQB overrule of local decisions, and now a moratorium. All those things, in our opinion, puts jobs in jeopardy at this point and delays projects. How many jobs are we talking about? The new projects that we've heard some of the people come up here and talk about today and the ones that we know about, Jordan Sands and Tiller and Brian Rock and others, we're talking hundreds of jobs, just with those that we know about. There's others in the future that we don't even know about. It's hard to get an estimate on how many of those are at stake. It's also important to note that these jobs are typically in rural Minnesota, where it's not easy to come by a job that where you can make a total package of $40 an hour. There are existing jobs also in jeopardy with this issue. As you heard, there's deposits of silica sand being found underneath limestone and other quarries that have been in existence for a long time. There's current operating engineers that work at those pits. And what I'm hearing from them is, and the owners, is the limestone supplies are dwindling. The life of the pit is coming to an end. If they're allowed to mine sand, it's going to extend the life of those pits 18 to 20 years. That means those people currently working there can probably retire there. That also means new opportunities long term for other operating engineers in the construction industry. As was pointed out, these are good union jobs. $40 an hour package in most cases is the average, a little more than that actually. They offer good family health care. They offer pensions. They offer steady employment that averages 1,800 hours a year, which is more than you'll typically see in the highway construction industry. They also offer the benefit of being in the local communities where people can go and not have to travel, as is typical of a lot of operating engineers in the highway industry. They're all over the state, all over the country. Wisconsin has created, the estimates that I've seen, about 2,500 jobs in the last few years in this industry. To me, that raises a couple questions. One is, if we didn't have strong state regulations here, if we didn't have any regulations here, and if we didn't have regulations here, why aren't those jobs here? If we have better sand and we have no regulation, why are those jobs in Wisconsin and not here? I think the answer to that question is we do have strong regulation here that has caused delays already, which is a fine thing. But we need to take time, but we've already done that. The other question that poses to me is how many more jobs in Wisconsin are going to be created before we let our people here compete? Well, you know,
do try and wrap up now,
yep,
Mr. George.
This is my last bullet point. Well, I appreciate Senator Schmidt's efforts here. Like I said, I just don't believe this is the best way to go forward in the interest of job creation in this industry. That's the end of my comments. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I wanted to point out, members of the committee, there are a lot of thick packets you all have, and a lot of people who did not have the chance to testify have comments in there, so I hope you will look them over. And like Mississippi River Parkway Commission expressed interest in making sure studied the impacts on the Great River Road and so on. Just want members to be aware there's a lot of information in the packets to take a look at. And I believe Craig Johnson and Anna Lee Garlitz from the League of Cities wish to comment on a provision in the bill. Welcome to the committee. Then we're going to open it up for committee discussion. And
thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Craig Johnson with the League of Minnesota Cities. We've been working closely and looking at this bill with my colleagues at the Association of Minnesota Counties and also with the Minnesota Association of Townships. And the comments that we're going to make are joint on behalf of all three of those organizations of local government. So I first of all want to thank the chair and committee staff and the author of the bill for their work in helping to address some of our concerns that we've seen since this language was introduced yesterday. Very helpful. We'll definitely continue to work. The A3 amendment did actually address a number of our immediate concerns, and we'll raise a couple of other issues. But just to be clear, kind of our general theme of issues we're watching in this is really watching local control and how it's affected, because we really do, obviously, as the affiliation groups of local government, very much believe that local decisions are being properly made and are the right place to make these kind of decisions about developments that are happening in communities. We very much support a focus on getting better and more consistent and more available information to our cities, towns, and counties to make those decisions better, more informed, and with the same information in front of everyone wherever we can possibly get that done. And so we'll be continuing to help work on that. And the other major thing we want to do is avoid unintended effects or consequences because of other changes to statute or process that could affect things that we aren't intending to work on right now. So with that in mind, on the new A3 language, wanted to just make one quick note. The Section 12 language that was added, that's the temporary environmental review requirements, on line 1.13 of the amendment, what this section basically does is says that if the Environmental Quality Board finds that a decision was made that does not follow its rules, that it can reject that, remand it back to the local unit of government to be reconsidered. The last sentence of that language says the board must make its decision under this section within 30 days. We would respectfully request, and can be done here or at a later point, but that after the word decision, the committee consider adding the words and findings, so that at least the EQB is telling the local unit of government where they broke the rules, not just saying you broke the rules, go do it again, but actually being very specific and saying you missed this step or this consideration that you should have done, so that we know exactly what it is that needs to be considered. Other than that, a lot of our concerns, except for there's one issue that Annalee is going to cover briefly, but the other work is pretty heavily stuff that would come in front more of the state and local government sections of this, with local provisions related to the silica sand board and other processes of local land use planning. So, Mr. Chair, unless the committee wants us to talk about that, I would be happy to work on that between now and when that bill goes to that committee for discussion.
Ms. Garlitz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Annalee Garlitz, and I'm with the Association of Minnesota Counties. I would like to reiterate everything that Mr. Johnson said. Local governments have been working together on this, and cities, towns, and counties are still working on gathering comments from our members that are in the counties that are impacted by this. And I have spoken with Senator Schmidt about some of the comments that we've been gathering, and he has indicated that he's happy to work with us before this gets to state and local government. So we're happy to work on him or work with him on making some of those changes. One of the items that I would like to address before this committee is in Section 10 under the General Environmental Impact Statement. Under Subdivision 3 on line 14.8, it indicates throughout the bill that local control be preserved and that local governments can be more restrictive than the minimum standards that are set. And because most of the a lot of the permits that we do are conditional use permits, we do tend to put conditions, and we may be more restrictive in some cases on these permits. And cities, towns, and counties, after this word consistent, so it, the sentence, we might ask that it be kind of clarified if the intent is to be to allow local governments to be more restrictive, that it would read, all state and local permits issued after the effective date of this section shall be modified to be consistent with or more restrictive than the specific recommendations of the generic environmental impact statement rather than the conclusions of. And that was just one suggestion that we would like to share with you. And that would be the comments that I have today before this particular committee. Like I said, we're very thankful that Senator Schmidt has indicated that he will be working with us before we get to the next committee.
Thank you, Ms. Garlitz. Senator Schmitz, any comments before we open it up for discussion and questions and so on?
Sure. If I could just say a few things, and I wanted to keep my initial remarks brief because we had great testimony today here from both sides. We've heard various perspectives. And I'd just like to emphasize again to members that I'm trying to strike the right balance here. I understand that sand mining offers great opportunity in Minnesota. After all, we have been mining in Minnesota, including southeastern Minnesota, in the case of aggregate, for years. But what causes concern is what's happened in western Wisconsin and the demand for silica sand, the price that's being paid for silica sand, and the volume of permit requests that have come down in such a short amount of time. The challenge before us is to enable our local leaders to make good decisions and for us to be prepared for an uptick in silica sand permits as the price for silica sand increases and the demand for it increases over time, which it's expected to do. In Wisconsin, there was a virtual gold rush on the silica sand, and we just want to make sure that that we're prepared for a second coming of that gold rush if it were to happen in southeast Minnesota. I'd just like to reiterate that that what I'm focusing on doing here in this bill is to addressing certain unanswered questions that the Environmental Quality Board spent a lot of time in 2012 identifying. They remain unanswered today. And I think that's a big a step in taking the right direction in providing clarity for our local decision makers. We also need to determine the proper role for the state. We heard today from, I think, just about every testifier here that we need more help at the state level. We need to engage state expertise in helping get good decisions made in this process. So I think that's something that we can all agree upon. The challenge before us is to determine what exactly that state role is to be. And we have to have that right balance, of course, of state agency expertise and local control. This bill is intended to start a conversation. It's certainly not perfect. I don't think any bill of this size could be with such a complex issue. And it's no doubt going to take some revision, and I do hope that the committee process improves this bill. But again, this gets the conversation started. This is a conversation that has been sorely lacking at the state level, and I'm glad to bring it to St. Paul. As you've seen, I've met with local leaders and concerned citizens, agency expertise, my colleagues here in St. Paul, any stakeholder who would like to talk, including industry, a lot of familiar faces here today. I want to continue those conversations so that we can get this right. I'd just like to add, this is not a typical example in my mind of environmental or concerns versus economic development. In southeastern Minnesota in particular, tourism and quality of life drive local economies. We have a lot of folks who move to this region because of the quality of life. And as silica sand mining increases in the years to come, we just have to make sure that we're prepared for it. I'm committed, again, to working with all stakeholders, everyone we've heard to today, to improving this bill through the committee process. With that said, I'm eager to hear your feedback and your questions, and I'd like to provide more clarity with what we're proposing today. And, again, getting this right is the ultimate goal. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And, Senator Schmidt, I was going to say the last two testifiers had very specific small comments about that strike me as fairly uncontroversial, so I wondered if you were interested in offering them as amendments, the one that Mr. Johnson had on your amendment, or the one Ms. Garlitz had on the state and local permits.
That sounds more than amenable. I'd be happy to offer those as amendments.
Mr. Kopp,
Mr. Chair, Mr. Johnson on the A3 amendment basically suggested that on line 1.31, after the word decision, include and findings, so the board would make its decision and findings within 30 days after the end of the comment period. I think I've got the crux of it there. And so that would be one amendment. And then Ms. Garlitz mentioned on the bill itself on page 14, line 9, after with, insert or more restrictive than, and then in delete conclusions and insert. Ms. Garlitz mentioned specific recommendations, and the chair and I were talking. It could just be recommendations at that point. So then the amendment would be on 14.9 after with or more restrictive than, and then delete conclusions and insert recommendations.
Yeah, that sounds sufficient.
Staff is saying, did she say findings instead of recommendations, or does it matter? Recommendations
and
they're making
recommendations.
They're making recommendations. Okay, Senator Schmitz, you're offering those. This is now we've started the debate. I'll say if people want to discuss this and so on, does anybody want to speak to either of the amendments? So you're offering is one amendment.
Yes.
Does anybody want to speak to the amendment? Any concerns? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Further discussion on the bill, amendments, questions, whatever.
Mr. Chair, Senator Schmidt, question regarding page 11, subsection 7. You very specifically indicate to local units of government what they will be doing with the proceeds of taxes. I'm concerned about this section because being a former member of a local unit of government, I just don't necessarily think that the state has to tell me where is best for me to put my money when I'm elected to represent the people. Is there a reason why that cannot be removed?
I'll tell you, we were planning on clarifying, and thank you, Senator, clarifying the tax language in here between stops along the committee process. This is essentially a proposal. There's no particular reason we have to have certain amounts of the tax revenue devoted to certain spending, whether it's transportation or environmental mitigation or economic development. We can determine that at this level in clarity, or else we can allow the local decision makers to make that decision.
So, Mr. Chair? Senator Schmidt, if I offered an amendment to strike subsection 7, you wouldn't necessarily be disagreeable to that?
You know, Senator, I would prefer that you allow us to work it out between now and our next stop and present this the tax section of this bill in a more amenable form to the tax committee. That would be my preference today. I'd be happy to talk with you in that process if you'd be amenable to it.
Mr. Chair, Senator Schmidt, my answer is I'd like it gone, but it really is because if we really do believe in local control and the money's going to be there, we shouldn't be dictating percentages on this has to go to roads, this has to go to bridges, this has to go to pit reclamation, maybe some of it has to go completely to pit reclamation or restoration. Maybe none of it has to. I think the local jurisdictions are going to know far better than we do here in St. Paul, so I would highly recommend that the entire subsection be stricken out, or the subdivision be stricken out, because it's just not necessary. That's my opinion.
Sure.
Mr. Chair, one additional question to Senator Schmidt. In the EQB language, and I think that's now been moved back with your A3 amendment, that's been now moved back to section 12. It makes the EQB almost seem like they have jurisdictional control over local governments and local units of government, that if the EQB doesn't believe in what the local units of government said was the right thing to do, then suddenly they have jurisdictional control to send it back to the local units of government. Do you think that's wise to have in there?
Yes.
Senator Schmitz.
What we need to do is we need to allow for the EQB to offer feedback to local decision makers on this question. I do think it is wise, and I think the amendment that we adopted today that allows not only for the recommendation to reconsider but also for the findings to be included is going to help in that process. I think it's good to have dialogue between the Environmental Quality Board and local leaders, and I think it's important that we give the Environmental Quality Board some authority to make sure that decisions are being made in accordance with the law.
Mr. Chair, and to Senator Schmidt, don't you believe that the local units of government should take the advice of the EQB as opposed to being jurisdictionally controlled by them? They are the elected officials. They are the ones that represent each individual area, whether it be Red Wing, whether it be a county. Don't you think that they should be advisory, so that those boards can take the information, move forward, maybe even modify their decisions, as opposed to be jurisdictionally controlled by the EQB under your statutory language?
Well, thank you, Senator. I think the intent here is to make sure that local decisions are consistent with the law and with ordinances, and decisions being made are consistent. So I don't view this as a problem at all. I actually think it's good that we give the EQB some teeth to enforce these ordinances.
Senator Benson.
To this point, Mr. Chair, the EQB can reject the decision of a responsible unit of government until March 15th of 2015. So if they decided they were just going to reject everybody's proposals, we have a moratorium until March of 2015. They can give the local units of government findings, but what pressure is there to say, nope, move this process along and make a final decision?
Senator Benson, it looks the language on line 30 and 31 related to they may send it back when a decision related to that does not follow the requirements in the rules of the board. I think I'm assuming this comes from down in one of the counties where they were dividing up projects in the, I don't remember the terminology in the EQB rules, but the thing phased and connected, where they were separating them out as if they were two separate projects, not phased and connected. Because this does seem to be limited only to when they feel the decision does not follow the requirements of the rules, because those are a state thing. But maybe, Senator Schmidt, did you have any?
Yeah, I would just like to add that this allows the Environmental Quality Board to enforce its rules, and I think it's as simple as that.
Senator Benson, not Senator Weber.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question regarding the GEIS. Past history indicates that it took about 5 years to complete one for timber harvesting, 4 years for feedlots. Your requirement really here from today in a little over a year as far as this GIS is concerned. I guess what information do you have that based on past history that this one should be able to move along more quickly than previous ones have?
Thanks for the question, Senator Weber. I have to tell you, I think there's a great deal of benefit that we're offering in this legislation that's going to get at that very question. We're scoping out what we want the environmental quality to, I'm sorry, what we want the GEIS to accomplish. I think that's saving us months on the front end of this, so that we're able to focus what the charge of the GEIS is. And I'm optimistic that if we set a firm deadline for when we want this report back and the information from the generic EIS back to our decision makers, we're going to be able to hold them accountable. So this is not an open-ended carte blanche, you know, go study something. This is very much, we've identified these specific questions. The Environmental Quality Board spent much of 2012 identifying specific questions that remain unanswered. Now we want to set the generic environmental impact statement forward to give us some answers in an appropriate amount of time that doesn't drag off into the foreseeable future.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Schmidt, then once the GIS is completed and the local units of government and the special board have adopted standards and what have you, will any projects be exempted from additional environmental reviews? Environmental impact statements or what have you?
We would still expect the process that's currently playing out with EAWs or EISs to continue at the local level. But what the GEIS does is it gives us very specific answers to these questions that have been identified. And it gives us a more regional picture of what increased mining operations in southeastern Minnesota would do to transportation, to water, to air, et cetera. And in the process at the local level would continue very much as it has.
Senator Weber.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One final thing, Senator Schmidt, and if this was covered and I missed it, I apologize. How does this affect those silica sand operations that are currently in place?
This bill?
Yes.
You know, we are not asking any existing silica sand mines to change their behavior at this time. We're allowing them to continue as they have, and they will be able to continue to employ people and produce sand.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just had a question regarding, and it was to the point that Senator Osmak made. I'm looking at this local government, and I'm sure that this bill will come to the local government committee.
Right. And where are you exactly, Senator?
Page 11, the line 1, the proceeds of taxes. I think there was a question of local people should be able to decide how to spend the money. But I think this section, if it remains as it is more protection to the mines themselves, because otherwise, a local government, if they decided they needed maybe a new wing onto City Hall or a new fire truck or something like that, that was something unrelated to the operation of the mine or the what happens after the mine is closed, that would be more troublesome, I think, to the mining companies. I think this at least states what local governments are able to do with the money and not go, you know, do things that aren't related to the question of environmental degradation of their local community. So I would recommend leaving it in simply for that protection.
That's right. Thank you, Senator Scalzi.
On that point, this is, I think, similar to the way we do it with aggregate taxes right now. But I might suggest to Senator Schmidt, maybe not now, but think about in the next week or so as you're going through other committees, whether you might want to pull the tax provisions into a separate bill, because that is going to be spending some significant time in tax committee. But I think all of these discussions will be, I see a number of members of this committee are on taxes as well, and I'm sure that will be going there.
Mr. Chair, to that point?
Yes, Senator.
In response to Senator Scalzi, I think we'll probably disagree a little bit on this one. However, I think the language, if your intent is that a portion goes to each one of these areas, I think the wording should probably be changed to either no less than or no more than, because right now it just says percent, period. So if they get $1 million and it's 20%, then they have to spend, they're required to spend 20%. And in some of these cases, it says for tourism, for roads, and maybe the roads don't need to be fixed, in which case maybe they need more money over some in tourism or in dealing with abandoned pits. So I just don't think, I think the elected officials are going to know what to do with the money, and I do have a certain level of concern that they would spend it on, let's say, a brand new community center. But then again, that's their responsibility.
Further discussion. Senator Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm looking at the Minnesota or Southern Minnesota, Southeastern Minnesota Silica Sand Board. I'm sorry, starting on page 6, line 22, it says the Southeastern Minnesota Silica Sand Board may be established by the counties referred to. What happens if they choose not to?
Well, this element of the bill here is put in here to empower local decision makers. And as I mentioned a couple times here prior, to allow decision makers at the local level to have agency expertise at the ready, to allow them to establish a model ordinance that would serve as a regional baseline from which local units can build. And I'll be honest with you, if our local leaders don't find value in this approach, we're not making them do it. But I would like to believe that there is a lot of value in this approach, that sort of regional conversation is necessary. Because as we said earlier, you know, water tables or aquifers don't stop at county lines. What happens in one county as it pertains to silica sand often affects neighboring counties or neighboring units of government. And this is a discussion that needs to happen. I think it would benefit all those involved to have the discussion, to engage agency expertise, engage stakeholders, including concerned citizens and industry officials, as well as local leaders at the same table to talk about a baseline from which local units can build up from.
Mr. Chair and Senator Schmidt, a county can opt out.
Oh, absolutely, if that's your question. Yeah, we're not forcing any one of these identified counties to participate. If they don't want to participate, that's not a problem. If they participate and they choose not to adopt the model ordinance that is identified, that's fine too. I mean, this is supposed to be an opportunity for local leaders, not something that we're requiring them to do.
Okay, and Mr. Chair and Senator Schmidt, just one more question going back to the Environmental Quality Board. They have to... they can only reject something if the rules of the board are violated, if they document the rules of the board are violated. Who makes the rules for the Environmental Quality Board?
What we've asked in this legislation is the Environmental Quality Board to take time this summer and make sure that their rules are up to par with the situation that we've seen in the demand for silica sand and increased sand mining permits. So the Environmental Quality Board.
Okay, so Mr. Chair and Senator Schmidt, we don't know what the rules that are going to be applied look like right now, so we give the industry no certainty at all.
This approach is taken from an approach that was utilized in the past administration to deal with a problem of PFCs, and I'd be happy to allow folks from agency to come and offer more insight and perspective on that. But this is not something that we're making up here. This is a previous approach that was used to address a former challenge for us.
Senator Betts, I believe some of the agencies, I'm not sure which ones, are here if you do have specific questions for them.
Mr. Chair, I just have been sitting on committees where there's always another bill or somebody else who's going to tell us the rules. We're just supposed to keep moving things along. And sure. I get concerned that we have no certainty about these rules as we're moving things forward and telling the industry and local units of government that they'll have to comply. Sure. And I'm sure the EQB is subject to open meeting laws, but here in the legislature, people have a lot more visibility as to what the rulemaking process is. We put it into statute. We elevate its importance. And so I want to just broadly call out that we are giving broad authority over a growing industry to the Environmental Quality Board, and they will establish the rules this summer, and then they will have to be followed by local units of government. And so this process, when this bill passes, is just beginning. It will be the rules that are made this summer that will be really key to what happens to this industry.
Yes. Mr. Chair, Senator Schmidt, members of the committee, I'm Bob Patton. I'm Executive Director of the Environmental Quality Board. I was thinking that, Senator Benson, thank you for your question. I was thinking that you were referring to Section 12 of the amendment. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So my understanding of the intent of this would be on line 31, or 30 and 31, that the board could reject the decision of the responsible governmental unit when it found that the rules of the board weren't followed.
My understanding of Senator Schmidt's intent is that these are the environmental review rules adopted by the Environmental Quality Board. So that's Minnesota Rules 4410.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to Senator Benson's question, I was actually going to bring that up, too. I find it interesting we all around the table believe in local control, but then we have probably one of the most powerful boards in the state next to the Health Insurance Exchange Board that's being created that can come in and preempt any of the local control. And I just find that interesting. But Senator Schmidt, I do want to thank you for your open door policy, and everybody has complimented you on that, and that's really great. I do have a question about the bill, though, and that is on the study, the A2 amendment that you have, that we have adopted. There doesn't seem to be on 1.6, the purpose of the moratorium is to provide sufficient time for the designated state agencies to study. So is there any time frame on that, and any guidelines of what they're supposed to study, and are they supposed to bring it back to the legislature? What is the end game on that?
Sure. The study referenced here is the generic environmental impacts statement. And the scope for that study is included in the legislation. We've taken a lot of time to build off of the progress of the Environmental Quality Board for much of the past year. So what we're setting in motion here is an accelerated timeline for this study to take place, to identify unanswered questions and to answer them, and to answer the questions that we've already identified for them. And and we're asking that this study be complete by May 1st of 2014, that they can turn this around in an expedited fashion. We're not trying to extend this into the foreseeable future. If you'll notice, the timeline for a lot of elements in this bill, the timeline is accelerated. We are going to push folks to get answers to our questions and to provide clarity and certainty so that we're not sitting in this room a year from now, wondering what's going to happen with this industry a year forward. What we want to do is take the time right now, while the demand for silica sand is lower than it has been and probably lower than it's going to be, to answer these questions that have been put forward to us through the EQB and to have some certainty moving forward. And the timeline for this study that's referenced here, again, is May 1st of 2014.
If that should be possible.
Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to commend Senator Schmidt for putting this bill together. I think one of the best indicators for future actions is history. And if you look at the history in Wisconsin, when there was total local control, it's a mess. I'm sure that people in Minnesota are much more upright or whatever, but there were planning and zoning chairs and chairs of actual counties who became employees of the sand companies after making sure that they got their not-so-wonderful plans through. So I really appreciate the fact that we will have our Environmental Protection Agency watching over this process and making sure that the people in the community are protected. I know there have been smaller local areas of government that have refused to allow comment from the community and that have turned it over to a larger part of larger organization of government, and that has been very frustrating for the people in that community. So again, thank you.
Thank you, Senator.
Senator Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Eaton brought up Wisconsin. I'm wondering if there's somebody either from the department or one of the experts who can talk about the differences between licensing a sand pit in Minnesota and licensing one in Wisconsin. Do we have Miss Morrison? You were there was a testifier who was a geologist. Perhaps she. Oh, I'm sorry, Miss Polly?
Kirsten Polly, yes.
Kirsten Polly, I'm looking in at the wrong line. Miss Polly, are you familiar with the differences in licensing in Minnesota and Wisconsin?
The permitting process in Wisconsin versus Minnesota?
Yes.
Yeah, there's a number of differences between Wisconsin's permitting process and Minnesota's permitting process. In Wisconsin, there's communities that aren't zoned. They have no zoning ordinances, and the state has basically the permitting authority in the form of a reclamation plan. And then the Department of Natural Resources has a number of regulations in terms of water use and stormwater quality, and they oversee those types of permits as well. The state of Wisconsin, the big difference, I think, is that the state of Wisconsin does not have environmental review requirements. And that really is the biggest difference between the two states. In Minnesota, a mandatory environmental review begins at 40 acres. And as you heard, if it's a smaller site, the local RGU can still require a discretionary environmental assessment worksheet be prepared. And so that environmental review really gives the opportunity for all the state agencies as well as the public to study the proposed project and the various potential impacts to the environment in the various areas of air, water quality, stormwater runoff, erosion, sedimentation. And it's a very thorough upfront review, and Wisconsin does not have that. And it takes much more time in Minnesota because of the environmental review process.
Okay, thank you. And Mr. Chair and Ms. Polly, I apologize for getting your name wrong. So any local unit of government can require a review. If it's a 40-acre facility, it must undergo a review. And if our MPCA is not satisfied, they can put the project on hold and require an EIS. Is that accurate?
Partly. Okay. If you have a project that does not meet the mandatory threshold, say you have a 30-acre mining project, it does not meet the mandatory threshold of 40 acres, the local government unit can, if the project has the potential for significant environmental effects, can order discretionary EAW. Once that EAW is completed, the local government unit, or the RGU, then has to make a determination as to whether or not there is the potential for significant environmental impact and an EIS should be completed. Or they can adopt a negative declaration and end environmental review at the environmental assessment worksheet level. So during the EAW, that is distributed to all of the local government agencies, as well as Federal Fish and Wildlife Service and a number of different government agencies. And there's a 30-day comment period, and that gives the agencies, such as the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, if they are really concerned about a particular aspect of the project, they can provide comments to the local government unit and suggest that they require further study in the form of an EIS.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Kadelka, did you want to comment Wisconsin and Minnesota difference?
Mr. Chair and committee members, for the record, my name is Kirk Kadelka with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. There was a question, Senator, specifically on the difference between permits, because it is amongst a number of agencies. The PCA has a number of air permits and water permits that are similar to Wisconsin because they are from federal regulations. But as a group, all of our agencies, since it's more than just PCA, we don't have a side-by-side comparison of all the permits. That's something that could be done through the process that EQB is going through now, or as the Senator's bill has, as a comparison through the GIS of best management practices or regulations between the states. That could be another opportunity to complete that.
Senator Osmick and Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, it's convenient that Ms. Polly is there. Can you explain how local governments can make sure that their permits are updated with new information when they get when we have new information on water quality standards or air quality standards when it becomes available? Can you explain that?
Well, a number of conditional use permits or interim use permits that have been issued. I guess the number isn't probably an accurate way to say it, but the last couple conditional use permits or interim use permits that I am familiar with, one in Scott County and one in Le Sueur County, have as a condition the ability for the county to open up the permit if there are areas where additional information has been obtained and the county feels that for the protection of the environment or its citizens that additional conditions should be placed on that permit. So there's language in the conditional use permit or the interim use permit that allows the county to open up under a process with a public hearing those permits and add conditions to address concerns that may arise.
And Mr. Chair, Ms. Pauley, can you maybe give us a thumbnail sketch of from start to finish all the entire scenario or this entire sequence of permitting and all the rules that start at the beginning when somebody says this is a mine, this is some place that we think we can do some mining at, all the way to when they open the doors and start. Could you sort of give us an idea about each step of all the permitting that goes on? Because I think we've talked about each individual component, but maybe putting it in the entire cycle maybe might give us good information.
Sure. So if a project is proposed, the project proposer has to define the project in quite a bit of detail. They typically then go to the county or the township and apply for a permit, whether the permit is a conditional use permit or in some instances an interim use permit. And if they meet the mandatory threshold for environmental review, if the project's in excess of 40 acres, or environmental assessment worksheet is required. If it's a 200-acre site, it automatically requires an environmental impact statement. So then the proposer prepares a draft environmental assessment worksheet and submits it to the county or the local RGU. They review that information. They develop a final environmental assessment worksheet. And if it's going for, if it's a larger site and it's going to have environmental impact statement, it's a scoping EAW that focuses on what the EIS will contain. So that usually takes a couple months to prepare that document and get it ready for distribution. Then the local government unit signs off on the EAW and submits it to the EQB for publication and distribution. And that document has to follow a form that is set forth by the Environmental Quality Board. There's an actual form that has 31 or 30, 32, 33 questions that have to be addressed for all projects, regardless of whether it's a mining operation or it's some other type of project that requires environmental review. That environmental assessment worksheet is then distributed to a number of agencies also set forth in the EQB rules. So it goes to the federal EPA, it goes to the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, it goes to the Minnesota Department of Transportation, it goes to the Fish and Wildlife Service, it goes to any local soil and water conservation services, as well as it's available for the public to review and comment as well. Once it's published and has been distributed, there's a 30-day public comment period, and the agencies as well as the public have the opportunity to submit comments on the document. And then the RGU takes those comments and responds to all the substantive comments that are received. And at that point, if it's not a mandatory EIS, the RGU decides whether or not there's enough information that's been gathered in the EAW process to proceed with the permitting process in the form of the conditional use permit or the IUP. And that's called a
Pauley, can I ask you to speed it up a little? I mean,
sure.
We don't need a
okay.
Half. I mean, a lot of us do understand the many steps.
Okay.
I understand if you want to give them a brief thing, but this is going on very long. So I understand the many steps, and you're trying to give it the information. But.
Okay. So they make a negative declaration or a positive declaration. It then proceeds on to an EIS if it was a positive declaration. Once the EIS is completed, then the conditional use permit process starts. And in conjunction with the environmental review, the applications are typically submitted to the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency and the DNR for the air emissions permit, the water appropriations permits, and any other the state permits. And so once the environmental review and the agencies can work on the two on the permits but they can't issue them until the environmental review is completed. So once environmental review is completed, then the rest of the permitting occurs.
Mr. Chair, thank you for allowing her to,
right,
to go. Because I think it's important to know of the cycle of events that take place. One final question for the author. I get the feeling that there are some local government units in here that may or may not be supportive of the moratorium. Would you be amenable to putting a provision on the moratorium that with a positive vote from any individual local unit of government that they can be removed from the moratorium?
At this stage, I would not be amenable to that. I have a number of communities up and down my district asking for three things in particular: a GEIS, a moratorium at the state level, and a broader state role in regulating this industry. So I do believe that our local leaders are looking for leadership at the state level and taking the time to answer these questions. So, Senator, I appreciate your questioning today and offering this amendment, but I would or offering this idea, but I would not be amenable to that today.
Further discussion, Senator Rose, and then Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And before I forget, Mr. Chair, are we taking a vote on this today?
If we can, I mean, we've got a long agenda. We're going to be having a lot of night meetings otherwise, so I hope we can, but we'll see.
Okay, I would like to request a roll call before I forget on this vote.
Okay.
Thank you very much. And unfortunately, Ms. Pauley sat down, and I did have a question for her. And basically, I was just wondering if the EQB ever advises the RUG or if this is going to be new authority for the EQB to be able to dictate what is happening here and to, as I said, preempt what the local governance has already made. I always thought they were just advising the RGUs, but now they'll have the opportunity to make a decision.
My experience is that the local RGUs oftentimes communicate with the EQB and ask for advice in interpreting their rules and proceeding with environmental review. So it is as an advisory role.
An advisory. So this is new, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry. This is new, new grounds for them.
Mr. Patton, briefly on that comment.
Yes, briefly. I would put it this way: that the provision that in the amendment regarding silica sand and in section 12 to provide authority to the EQB to essentially remand a decision to the RGU. That is new authority that the EQB presently does not have.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just a couple comments because for somebody who lives in Greater Minnesota and has definitely been through all the environmental process, permitting regulation process when it comes to the ethanol industry, and Senator Schmidt, over half the ethanol that's produced in the state is produced in my Senate district. And so I know the permitting and regulations very, very well in this industry. And believe me, when the expansion is going over in Wisconsin and not in Minnesota, I think that's a pretty good indicator that we have some very strict and comprehensive regulations that are in place that need to be followed. And even though I complain about the departments, the PCA and the DNR and the MDH, they do a very good job at making sure that they protect our environment and protect the citizens and still want to create a healthy economic growth in the state. And I think that clearly shows that we are following the rules. I just want to say that, you know, agriculture, whatever its form is the number one economic driver in the state. And it is the biofuels industry. It's mining, it's timber, it's animal production, crop production. And we have to be very careful what we're doing here because it is the economic driver in this state. And even wind production, I believe that's an ag product. And it's been very good for my Senate district with the seabed designation and for Senator Weber's district. It's been a huge economic driver. But all of these industries are following local, state, and fed regs. And I think we have to, again, give the respect that these local officials are due for being elected by their constituents and making sure that they protect them, but still, you know, move the ball forward. I believe that's the most important thing is we are, again, missing this opportunity of this energy revolution. And I can't remember who said it, but I thought that was a very profound thing to say, that there is this, the state and the nation is being driven by energy costs right now, and we don't have natural gas, but it is abundant and it's moving forward, and we're taking full advantage of it. But this is the one thing we do have. It's been here for 100 years, and I think if we just keep it realistic, we can have a win-win here. And silica sand is something that we can do. I get a little tired of agriculture being the whipping post. And that's what it seems to be. And I know I'm on my, stump speech here, Senator Marty or Mr. Chair, but, it just seems like every time there's an issue, and whether it's a transmission line coming through, now it's silica sand, or it's maybe some feedlot regulation, this is agriculture. People live in agricultural land. They have to expect the smells and the dust and the inconveniences and their roads beat up, because that is what happens. Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator, if I could...
Oh, I'm not done. Thank you, Senator Schmidt. So I believe that this is a small business. We have to make sure that we are able to help these small businesses grow. And this bill needs a lot of work. But again, I appreciate you working on this issue, having an open door policy. But I believe there's going to be some tremendous ramifications if we go forward with this bill.
Senator, if I could just respond real quickly. Your comments are well taken, and I appreciate that. I'd just like to emphasize that many of my communities in southeastern Minnesota that I represent, work hard to represent, have asked for us to do just this today, to propose the ideas that we are offering up today. The Minnesota Farmers Union has asked me to look into this today. Agriculture is asking us to look into this today. We're not here on a whim. There are a lot of questions that have been identified in a formal process through the Environmental Quality Board. I'm proposing an expedited process to get answers to those questions so that in a short amount of time, in an appropriate amount of time, we can move forward together with certainty and with clarity without adding anything to the regulatory process or the permitting process. We just want to get questions answered and take the time to do that.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But Senator Schmitz, you're putting a moratorium on the entire state. A moratorium is not good for – that sends huge signals out. And that's – you have to be very, very careful with that. Again, this is an ag product. This is agriculture. This is small business. And so what we're sending out is extremely heavy-handed with this bill.
Senator, we have an opportunity to get this right. Living down along the river in southeastern Minnesota, I don't have to go very far. I don't have to leave the state to see what's happened in Wisconsin. I can see it from not far from my house. We have an opportunity to do something here proactively to answer questions that have been plaguing local leaders and take the time to put in place a process that's going to work for industry, that's going to work for local leaders, that's going to allay the fears of our concerned citizens. I think it would be a mistake for us not to take that time today, not to take the time in this legislative session to set that ball in motion. It's unfortunate that we didn't get that ball moving sooner. I think that a year's time can do a lot in this process, and I look forward to getting these questions answered.
Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Schmidt. First, I'd like to just commend you for bringing this bill forward. I think that especially for those of you in the audience, if you can just think about someone who is just recently elected to come forward this quickly with such comprehensive legislation and to have had such a open door policy to visit with folks on all different sides of this issue is commendable. I think it's worth noting that one aspect of the bill that we haven't discussed a lot that I really appreciate is this establishment of the Southern Minnesota Silica Sand Board. In that it really does bring together local government officials and others, decision makers, that will help set the policy that will establish what is best for the region. And I think that that's what we've seen that's been missing. There's been this patchwork where there's some angst on the part of industry because they don't necessarily know what to expect in different cases. And I think that this sand board will help resolve some of those problems. In addition, the benefit of this legislation is obviously that some of the taxes collected from this growing industry will go back to help the local units of government and the citizens who are struggling with these problems. So I appreciate that you're willing to continue to work with folks on all different sides of the issue to advance this bill, but I'd just like to commend you for bringing the bill forward at this time, because clearly as state lawmakers who are not all as directly impacted as you are, we all want to see this done right. And I think we can also look to examples of the IRRRB, for example, to see how that has really benefited northern Minnesota, and see some semblance of similarity between the establishment of a southern Minnesota silica sand board and the benefit that has had on the environment and the local economy.
Well, thank you, Senator. I'd just like to, if I could, Chair, don't want to take too much credit. A lot of the ideas put forward in this bill have been done before to solve other problems in other capacities in Minnesota. And in terms of giving credit, we're here today because of the folks who are filling this room today, who've taken out time and spent, endless resources advancing this topic at the local level and now at the state level. And you all really deserve the credit today. So thank you.
Mr. Chair, point of information. Question regarding the moratorium itself. Is the moratorium, and this would be probably the legal counsel, is the positioning of the moratorium within the bill is on page 14, does that make it applicable to the entire state, or does it only apply under page 5, sections 518 through 521 to only specified counties that are listed in the applicability section?
Mr. Chair, Senator Osmick, the way the moratorium is written, it is a statewide moratorium. The board, that's a separate chapter. We use the definition of the terms from that chapter to define what's not or what the moratorium covers. But it is a statewide moratorium on silica sand, on new or expanded silica sand mining, processing, or transfer facilities.
Okay. Mr. Chair, and to Senator Schmidt, would you be amenable to making your moratorium, seeing as this really has been all to these specific counties, would you be amenable to making your moratorium specific to the counties involved?
Mr. Chair, Senator, that's something that we actually considered at the early onset here, and I've been advised that that's not permissible under the state constitution, that we have to have a statewide moratorium, and we cannot proceed as you suggest. I certainly entertain that idea early on in this process.
Senator Hoffman, then Senator Benson, and I believe Senator Rosen had asked for a roll call when we get to vote. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator, it's a great opportunity for Minnesota to dig deep and move our state forward, and lots of conversations around this, and we just barely started this conversation. And one of the things that I heard that has some growing concern is how would this bill stop a current operation? That it seems to be resonating me, and I hope that as we move forward that the jobs piece is still very, very much a big factor. And I have on record the chamber saying good union paying jobs, and I think that's a good start as well. I mean, that's good to hear that. But in all sincerity, as a follow-up, because we've barely touched on many of the impacts, especially the health impact that is sitting there. I think it's good that you're moving this through the process, and as such, thanks for bringing this forward. And I would support moving this on to the next committee so that we can get those answers, the questions answered, and we have a lot more to learn through this whole process. So thank you for starting this conversation, this dialogue, and let's get going.
Thank you, Senator.
Senator Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Schmidt. During the course of the moratorium, what will happen to the businesses who had planned to expand here in Minnesota?
If a business is currently operating in Minnesota, if a sand mine is currently operating in Minnesota, it's going to be allowed to proceed. Anything that's not permitted at the effective date is going to have to wait until we answer these questions that are plaguing our local leaders, so that we can get this right.
And Mr. Chair and Senator Schmidt, could they just move their business operation to Pennsylvania or Wisconsin and hire people there?
We have an opportunity right now to get this right, and I'm proposing that we take the time to answer these questions and have a clear path forward so that our local leaders know how to permit this, and that we can feel good about a sand industry that will be moving into Minnesota.
Mr. Chair and Senator Schmidt, These are highly capital intensive, and they're not decisions made on a whim. And once they decide to open a mine not in Minnesota, they're going to complete that work. And only after they've completed that work will they look back here or consider expansion. There's only so much capital available for investment, and I want to make sure that we are being very thoughtful. That capital is not going to sit and wait for this moratorium to be finished. That capital will flow to where it can be best utilized and where the jobs can be created. It would be nice to have that choice in Minnesota, but with this moratorium, that will not happen.
Senator, I appreciate your questions today. You've been very engaged. And, you know, I hope I give members the impression that this is a thoughtful approach to a complex problem. We're trying to anticipate a number of challenges and address them that have been identified for us. We're sitting on the best silica sand in the world. And if there's a long-term demand for this sand, as industry has told us there is, there will be plenty of opportunities for jobs in the future.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Schmidt. I think there's a lot of environmental review that is already going on. I think allocating resources to our departments so they can be more supportive of local units of government would strike a better balance between protecting the environment, informing and engaging local units of government, but not blocking that investment that these companies are looking to make in Minnesota that keep people employed. I've heard from some of the union representatives that these jobs are $40 an hour value jobs, and that means a lot to a local community too. And so I just want to bring that voice to the table. Thank you, Senator, for your work.
Senator Schmidt moves Senate File 786 is amended be recommended pass. Is there further discussion?
Mr.
Chair? Referred to the Committee on State and Local is the first one to get. I think you go to several other places. State and Local is it? Senator Osmond.
Mr. Chair, I would move to amend the amended version to strike subdivision 7.
Senator Schmidt, Senator Osmond moves to delete section 7. Subdivision 7.
I'd like to speak to that. To members of the committee, I don't like to let other committees do the work that I should do, and I know that probably local government is going to deal with this particular provision. I've already somewhat spoken to that. I just don't necessarily think that the local units of government need necessarily to be told where their proceeds from this are going need to be spent. So I would prefer to see this out of the bill so that it moves forward in a better version.
Senator Schmidt, do you have any comments on the amendment?
Senator Osmick, I take your comments, your questions seriously today, and I will do my best to address them. I would not advocate that we amend this, though, as you suggest.
Further discussion on the Osmick amendment. Not all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Chair's in doubt. All those in favor, raise your hands.
We're loud today.
All those opposed. Chair's no longer in doubt. The motion does not prevail.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Osmond.
One additional amendment, and I'll be done with my amendments for the day. Under page 14, under the moratorium section, subdivision 4, I would like to add after the clause statement on 1.8, I'd like to add an additional sub A to indicate the following: with a majority vote, any local unit of government can be exempt from this moratorium provision. And I'll speak to that.
Why don't you speak to it? OS, make sure council and staff has it correctly.
Yep.
But go ahead and speak to it.
This is to allow local governments to have local control. This is an opportunity for those counties that feel that they have sufficient environmental information, that they've gone through all the processing, that all of the federal, state, and local regulations have been met, that the local unit of government can move forward with the projects that they have in their own wisdom. They are locals. They do have control. They have the right to zone. They have the right to control many aspects of land planning. Matter of fact, they are land planning. They have ultimate control. So I would make this motion to allow those local governments to decide if the moratorium is something that works for them. If it doesn't, if they don't care to, they can certainly be under the moratorium if they choose to.
Senate Councilman Research, one of you have Could you
Mr. Chair, I think I'll restate this, and Senator Osmak, if please comment. I think I got the concept of what you're trying to do. We're looking at the A2 amendment.
Correct.
And on one line 1.3, before until, insert the parenthetical A, and then on after line 1.8, insert the parenthetical B, and state after that, with the majority vote of the governing board, a local unit of government may opt out of the restrictions in paragraph A.
Perfect. Thank you.
Did you say majority or unanimous vote of the governing board?
With majority vote.
Majority, and that's what you have. Okay. Okay, Senator Schmidt, do you have any?
Again, Senator, I appreciate the the thoughtfulness that you bring to this discussion today. At this point, I'd oppose the amendment. I'd like to have a discussion on this in the next committee along the way here, and continue the dialogue on this element of the bill. But for today, I oppose.
Further discussion on the amendment. If not, all those in favor of the Osmak amendment say aye.
Aye. Aye.
A motion of those opposed?
No.
No. No.
Motion does not prevail. Further discussion. Not, there's a roll call been requested on Senator Schmidt's motion that Senate File 786 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on State and Local Government. Senator Rosen.
Mr. Chair, there was a couple questions on air quality that I was going to ask Ms. Pauley, but I know you've ran a very good committee here, and I appreciate the time. But, again, I just want to say that I think the department's going through the biofuels permitting and regulations that we have out in greater Minnesota, going through the feedlot regulations. I believe and I trust the department's ability to regulate this industry and move it forward without any more moratoriums and any more study. I think the rules and the laws are and regulations are in place, and I think we should let them do their job.
Senator Schmidt, your final comment?
I'd just like to thank members of the committee and Mr. Chair for a thoughtful discussion today. And, again, that open door policy that I've really tried to have here will continue. If there are any concerns folks would like to bring to my attention, please let me know. Stop by. I'd love to chat.
Thank you. On the Schmidt motion, we'll call the roll.
Senator Marty?
Aye.
Senator Benson?
No.
Senator Brown is absent. Senator Dibble? Senator Eaton?
Yes.
Senator Herr?
Yes.
Senator Hoffman?
Aye.
Senator Coonan?
Aye.
Senator Osmak?
No.
Senator Rosen?
No.
Senator Scalzi?
Aye.
Senator Schmidt?
Aye.
Senator Sieben?
Yes.
Senator Weber?
No.
By a vote of 8-4, the motion prevails and the bill is on its way to state and local government. With that, we're having, I'm not sure what's on Thursday, we are having a regular meeting during committee time. With that, there being no further business today, the meeting's adjourned.